What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Evan Roberts. Tiki Barber. It's Evan and Tiki on WFAN, The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
That's it. No more trade rumors. No more trade ideas. This is the New York Yankees. This is the New York Mets. And it's time to win. We got a lot to talk about on this Friday. The fallout from the trade deadline, of course. We will be joined by the general manager of the New York Yankees, Brian Cashman, who right now, his popularity rating in New York is through the roof.
And with the town. He said he was, and he did.
And he also did something in the last 10 minutes that I didn't see coming. So obviously he makes all the trades from yesterday. We were live on the air for it, including the Camilo Duvall shocker right at the buzzer. But they just announced, hey, we've added David Bednar to the roster. He's wearing number 53. Cool. They added Jake Bird to the roster. He's wearing number 59. Awesome. Camilo Duvall has been added to the roster, number 75. Jose Caballero added to the roster, number 72. And then the Yankees throw in at the end of all of that, we've released Marcus Stroman. And I'm surprised. Now, the Yankees had a decision to make this weekend because Luis Gil is back. He got through his rehab, and he's returning on Sunday. And when you look at the Yankee five starters, obviously Max Fried and Carlos Rodon are locks. Luis Gil is back. That's number three. And then you've got Cam Schlittler and Will Warren and Marcus Stroman. And so who would the odd man out be? I think if you're trying to preserve the depth of starting pitching, you could easily say, you know what? Cam could work out of the bullpen.
Right.
The problem is you got such a loaded bullpen, what kind of role would he have? So if you're looking at performance, the performance would say Marcus Stroman, who came back from the injured list, went out, made six starts, pitched to a 4.5 ERA, wasn't great, wasn't terrible, was just blah. But when you release him, you kind of eliminate your pitching depth just in case there's another injury. So I tell you this, just hearing the news in the last few minutes, I'm kind of surprised that Brian and the Yankees did this and released Marcus Stroman.
Well, I think it's surprising only because do we really trust Cam Schlittler to be that guy for the rest of the season? Do we trust that Luis Gil is going to come back and be healthy? And even if he is healthy, is he effective as a starting pitcher for the New York Mets? And again, when we talked about this yesterday, I threw out Will Warren as the guy who was likely the third starter.
Right.
But that was kind of just hope and prayer of Will Warren. But is he a postseason starting pitcher quality? I don't know. There are some games where he feels like he is. There are others where he feels like the young player that he actually is. So it's really one of those, I'm going to say it was a good decision because Marcus Stroman has this propensity to just not be the guy. Kind of like he was yesterday. He was great for three innings. Then all of a sudden he fell apart.
Yeah.
But so I guess I'm okay with it, but it does leave some big question marks for the Yankees going the rest of the season and certainly into the postseason.
Yeah, I think what it does is Ryan Yarbrough is on his way back, so he's pitching depth just in case.
Morash's favorite.
Right. And the other thing, and luckily Brian's going to join us in 2 hours, and he is very honest. I mean, he was honest about DJ LeMahieu, which is now old news, when he said DJ couldn't play third base. Yep. He didn't want to play third base. So I think it's fair to ask Brian, we'll see if he gives the answer, that Marcus Stroman was told, we're going to move you to the bullpen. And to go all the way back to February, Marcus Stroman said, I'm not going to do that. And obviously, if that was the answer, and I don't know if it was, I'm just going back to spring training when that was an issue, or it potentially was an issue, then I could understand it. So I'm curious if this release has anything to do with that, because the last thing you want to do when you really can't add to your roster in August and September, because you can't. The only thing you can do is call guys up.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, you can claim guys off waivers, which is kind of a newish thing where teams fall out of it and they put expensive guys on waivers and you can technically pick them up, but you can't bank on that. The last thing you want to do is give up starting pitching depth, and they just did by releasing Marcus Stroman.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not saying it's the worst thing in the world. I'm just more surprised by it because usually you want to hoard anybody that could potentially make a start for you down the stretch.
You know, you just eliminate some options.
Yes.
But that's what it comes down to. The optionality is not there for the Yankees come the rest of the regular season into the postseason. And I think that's okay as long as Luis Gil is fine and Cam Schlittler keeps pitching relatively well.
And,
big if, though.
And he's going to get the opportunity.
Big if.
And you talk about the postseason. Obviously, the Yankees have a lot of work to do to get to the postseason, and we'll see if it's a wild card series or a division series. Right now, the Yankees have two guys who are making postseason starts, assuming they're healthy. Max Fried, your ace, no question.
Mm-hmm.
Carlos Rodon's had a solid year. Right now, over the course of the final stretch of this season, hey, Will Warren, it's your world. Hey, Luis Gil, it's your world. Hey, Cam Schlittler, it's your world. Based on how well guys pitch, and assuming the Yankees are playing October baseball, I think when we're sitting here in late September having this discussion again, the answer may be more obvious on who's making postseason starts. Now, in terms of what the Yankees and Mets did yesterday and the days leading up to this, it is rare, if not impossible, to hit every target at a trade deadline.
Mm.
And I remember in the weeks leading up to the trade deadline, one of the conversations around the Yankees was they have so many holes. They got third base. They need a right-handed bat. They need bullpen help. And they need starters. I would say that Brian Cashman hit at about an 80% clip because he not only added a third baseman in Ryan McMahon, he added three right-handed bats that can come off this bench. Guys like Ahmed Rosario, guys like Slater, right. Guys like Caballero. He completely remade the Yankee bench so we don't have to watch Oswald Peraza and Yorbit Vivas in this world. So he did that. The bullpen. I mean, I got to tell you, he did more with this bullpen than I could have expected. He got two controllable closers. And that doesn't even include Jake Bird, who we'll see about. I know he struggled over the last month. And you never know with relievers, but to walk away with Camilo Duvall and David Bednar, like, if we're all being honest, even if you're the archest Brian Cashman hater, even if you were the guy at Yankee Stadium with the fire Brian Cashman banner, which I can't wait to ask Brian about, because I'm curious if he has a message to that guy today. Like, hey, I got two words for you.
They were pretty good.
He didn't add a starter. And, yeah, the Mets didn't add a starter. And it's totally fair today to say, come on, they didn't add a starter. But what starter did you want him to add?
My question with Jake Bird is, what kind of beard is he rocking right now?
The good news for Jake Bird is he doesn't have to shave it.
He doesn't have to fully shave it.
Right.
But he does. There were times in his career where that thing was unruly. I don't know if it's like that now. I haven't seen him lately, but I wonder what kind of beard he's going
to
rock.
Well, he's going to have to clean that up. The Yankees still have sort of rules. But it's tough to get annoyed about not adding a starter. Like, could the Yankees have used a starter? Yeah. Could the Mets have used a more top-of-the-rotation starter? Absolutely. But when you look at the remnants of this trade deadline now, who are you screaming that they didn't get?
Well, we know how the starters didn't go really until the very end.
And not a lot did.
Not a lot did. The asking prices were too high. But if I think the Yankee fan is cautiously optimistic that Luis Gil is going to be fine. That meaning he's going to be the fine addition at the trade deadline, as Sean mentioned a couple of times yesterday. I think you hope that he has a semblance of what he did last year, where
right.
He was rookie of the year. He felt seamless. He felt like he'd been in the league for a few years and just didn't feel the pressure. So it's just a cautious optimism. And I think it's all you could do, given what was it being asked for starting pitchers at this trade deadline. I mean, I almost feel like, and we'll ask Brian.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Gasman, who did he go after and why did he say no? And the answer is going to be they were asking for too much.
Well, there's a report from John Heyman that in the Sandy Alcantara, Edward Cabrera, Marlin conversations, they were insisting on Spencer Jones and they were insisting on George Lombard Jr.
Right. Only for Paul Skeens.
I don't know if that's necessarily true, but for Sandy Alcantara.
It sounds good.
Yeah. For Sandy Alcantara, and I love Sandy, I think he is going to blossom next year and the year after. He's under team control for multiple years. He's been a Cy Young caliber pitcher, but he's coming off Tommy John surgery.
Yeah.
And in terms of 2025, there's a lot of questions about what he would provide to you over the last 2 months and the postseason.
Yeah, but that would have just been a, let's hope he's okay now, but we got him for 2 years.
Yes.
That's what that would have been.
That to me, and I don't want to be a prospect hugger for both the New York Mets and the New York Yankees, but I would not have traded either of my top prospects for Sandy Alcantara, and I love Sandy. And so in the Met case, if the Marlins, and I don't know if it ever got this far, but if they were asking for Brandon Sproat or they were asking for Jonah Tong, I would have said no too.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with the Yankees on Spencer Jones and George Lombard Jr., and that's not prospect hugging. Look, Brian Cashman and David Stearns did a few things that are very similar and a few things that are very different over the last couple of days. They all traded prospects. They all traded guys who have a chance to be good. But none of them, at least for now, are considered premium prospects.
Right.
And they did it and still really added to their roster.
Well, we also just have to, and I think this is hard to do, realize that sometimes a prospect is there to be traded.
Oh, yes.
I mean, it's part of the process, especially when you have a team that's built with a few or almost a handful of stars. Right? The Mets are that way. The Yankees are that way. There are stars on this team, guys who you know are professionals. You know that they can perform for the entirety of a full 162. For the most part, and we know, don't call about Aaron Judge. For the most part, they're going to get to the postseason and do what they're supposed to do. But at some point, like you got to think about replacing them, but it's not now.
Right.
It's years from now. And so that's what prospects are for in the long term, but in the short term, they're there to be traded.
A lot of them are. And really what it comes down to is, like, one of the things I found interesting is when the Yankees got David Bednar, we look at, oh, who did they trade? And they traded Rafael Flores, who's their eighth best prospect.
Mm-hmm.
And then they traded their 14th best prospect. And another guy not in the top 30. And we look at that and say, wow, that doesn't seem like it's a lot. How did the Yankees get him?
Right.
And what was really interesting is Ben Cherington, the GM of the Pirates, admitted, we just like those guys better. Yeah, there are other packages that are ranked higher in terms of prospect rankings. He liked those guys. So sometimes it's just finding the right kind of matchup with another general manager and how they view your young players. And I don't know what Rafael Flores is going to be. I don't know what Rock Riggio is going to be or Tristan Veerling is going to be.
Yeah, I don't even care at this point.
You can't, because what the Yankees did, and they traded, I added this up, they traded 13 young players over the last week, okay? Six of them are not in the top 30 of their prospect rankings. Seven of them are. The highest ranked prospect was Rafael Flores at 8. The next highest was 10.
Right.
Right? So they didn't give up a lot of highly regarded prospects, and what they did is they added 3 relievers, all of which are going to be here next year. So, like, if you're a Yankee fan who doesn't believe in this team, and I think you should, because why the hell not? I don't think the American League's that good. Why can't get hot at the right time? They added 3 relievers who aren't just potentially going to help you this year, but are here next year. And they did that of the same thing with Ryan McMahon. He's here next year, too. So the Yankees were able to not trade top-end prospects, at least ones that aren't ranked very high,
because
you never know what the next few years are going to look like. And they were able to bring in 6 different players. 5 of the 6 are here next year. Now, the Mets did the complete opposite, which I'll get to in a second, in terms of controllability. But I don't know how, as a Yankee fan, and I know you've had your issues with Cashman and Boone and the organization, and you've called up this radio station, and you've talked into a microphone saying all these horrible things about the Yankees, and maybe they were right at the time. But I don't know how today, on August 1st, you can't be giddy about what the Yankees just did.
We're in it to win it.
What was that?
You should be.
You gotta be.
I mean, they did all they could do. That's what I feel at this point. They did all that they could do. And was there a starting pitcher available? Probably, but it wasn't worth it.
Who? For anyone who says it, is Merrill Kelly the guy? And I heard Sal mention earlier that he had heard Merrill Kelly didn't want to pitch in New York, which, by the way, is a huge thing. And Brian's had this experience over the years in figuring out who can and who can't. If there's an inkling that a guy can't pitch here or a guy can't play here, I'm sorry. I'm running far away. New York is a different animal. You know better than anybody.
Of course, after Sonny Gray, the Yankees will never do that.
I don't buy that about Sonny Gray, but I'm not going to get into that argument today.
Well, they believe it. That's all that matters.
That's a disagreement, Dad.
That's all that matters is they believe it.
Kevin Brown's a better one there.
Kevin Brown? I think Kevin Brown was cooked at the end.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was not handling New York necessarily.
Well, if you're having a mental breakdown in a locker after a start, that's I would say not handling it well.
That's because he's intense, man. Amari Stoudemire did the same thing. No one would say he could handle New York. But I think they did a great, great job. Now, here's the tough part for the New York Yankees and the New York Mets. I think David Stearns did a wonderful job. I think Brian DeCashman did a wonderful job. And I don't remember very often coming on Sports Talk Radio the day after a trade deadline and saying that about both GMs. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I've ever said that. Where, hey, both guys did a great job. And they did. On paper, they absolutely did. They both didn't give up top prospects. They both built super bullpens. We could have fun arguments about which bullpen is better. All good. Now the tough part. And the tough part is Aaron Boone and the New York Yankees have to get their heads out of their ass, not make mental mistakes, play smart baseball, and win. And for the New York Mets, Francisco Lindor and Peter Jefferson Aloysius Alonso, they too have to get said heads out of their ass and start hitting. These general managers, in my opinion, did their job. They went out and did their job.
Right.
And now, the tough part. It is on Aaron Boone. It is on Carlos Mendoza. But more importantly, it is on the players to now do their job. So I don't know how this season's going to end. I don't know where it ends for the Yankees. I don't know where it ends for the Mets. I have no idea. None of us do. Baseball's baseball, and you can't predict it. But here's what I know. When we write the postscript, that's an easier word to say.
And it's less morbid.
That's true. Then we're talking about death. When we write the postscript of this season, we cannot write on the tombstone, Cashman's fault.
Right.
Stearns' fault. Because I think both guys maybe didn't have the greatest off seasons or the perfect off seasons in the case of Brian Cashman, but they went out at the trade deadline and they added and they made these teams good and they competed. And now it's time, and this is the tough part, and some may say it's the boring part because you can't call up Sports Talk Radio making trade demands for Stephen Kwan or God knows who. Now you got to play.
Yeah. And that's the part that it ultimately, when it falls on the players, we now get mad at the players.
That's right.
Now the conversation or the anger that I had yesterday for the Yankees ineffectiveness, despite winning, not the game yesterday, the game 2 days ago. Now that's every day. Now it's on the players. Now it's on Aaron Boone because, it's so hard to evaluate any of these things until you actually see guys play. Like, who knows what David Bednar is going to look like as a Yankee?
No idea.
So as soon as we know, then we can evaluate whether or not Brian Cashman did a good job. But the reality is, he said he was going to go to town, and he went to town, relatively speaking, and got everything that the Yankees, in our minds, we think that they needed.
Well, hold on a second. Hold on a second. You just threw something in there. You said, relatively speaking. I'm going to ask you point blank. Did Brian Cashman go to town?
I mean, what? He filled what he needed to fill.
Stop dancing.
Yeah.
Did he go to town, Tiki? No, yes or no?
When I hear go to town, I think I'm going to get the most expensive steak. I'm going to get the most expensive bottle of wine.
Right.
I'm setting up for a 3-course meal, and it's going to be hell. I might even go get candles. Probably the fake ones, so I don't risk burning my house down. But still, I'm going to go make this thing and church it up for real. I mean, he did some good moves. It's more like he went to the market. He didn't go to town.
Oh, come on.
He went to the market.
I disagree. I disagree. I think he went to town. Sean is a Yankee fan, and you have been a harsh Brian Cashman critic. Did he go to town?
He went to town.
Thank you.
And got luxury boots, too. restaurant was great. He had appetizer money.
I also don't think, like, I know that for 3 weeks, maybe more, when talking about the Yankee trade deadline, there was a lot of, they have so many holes. It was never realistic that you were literally going to fill every single hole.
No.
And I would argue, and we'll ask Cash about this, that a part of why they went almost overboard with the bullpen, because I'd argue they didn't need three relievers. I think once they added David Bednar and even Jake Bird, I felt like their bullpen's fine.
Yeah.
I think a part of why they went even more so towards it was, we're not getting a starting pitcher.
Right.
So let's make up for the fact that we can't do that by building a bullpen that is so deep and so long that that in the fourth inning or the fifth inning, we can start using high leverage guys.
Right.
And I think both the Yankees and the Mets are now equipped to do that.
And you can do it multiple days in a row.
Yes.
Because of how many guys you now have in your bullpen.
So even though he didn't add a starter, which I don't put on him just based on the starters that were moved. Same with the Mets, because these conversations are almost like they override each other. We're talking about two things that are related. Like both teams could have used a starter. I think the Mets were more looking for the high-end guy. The Yankees could have used more of a middle-of-the-rotation guy since they already have a high-end guy in Max Fried. But I excuse both of them for not getting a starting pitcher because I didn't see a starting pitcher moved that I'd say, where are you at on this? I didn't see that happen. It didn't happen. So I think Brian Cashman went to town. And so to the Yankee fan out there, I ask you a question. Number one, are you going to call up the radio today and apologize to Brian Cashman? You have the option to do that. Or you go the other way and say, no, I'm still not pleased. So we'll hear from the Yankee fan. We will hear from the Met fan. How are we feeling after the trade deadline? They did add Cedric Mullins. Is that good enough? The Mets' issues this season has mostly been their offense. Is Cedric Mullins good enough? I heard Michael Cole today, voice of WWE, diehard Met fan. You know what he said? Cedric Mullins ain't good enough. So there's a mixture of opinions regarding that.
We have some breaking news in the sports world.
What is it? What sport?
The NFL.
The NFL? What are they, these pigs, they just can't let baseball have their day.
Micah Parsons
yes.
has tweeted, thank you, Dallas, with a long, and I mean, say King Aaron Judge alarm going off, a long, long screed about his time in Dallas coming to an end in which he ends it. I have made the tough decision. I no longer want to play for the Dallas Cowboys. My trade request has officially been submitted to Stephen Jones personally.
Wow.
Wow.
This has certainly been bubbling over the last few months.
Really the last year.
Yeah. And now it's come to the bubbling moment of the best defensive player in football. Is that a fair statement to say?
Yeah, he's one of them.
One
I don't
of
know
them?
If he's the best, but he's one of the best defensive ends in football. That's for sure.
He's on the current Mount Rushmore of defensive players.
Yes.
Has told the Dallas Cowboys, you're dead to me.
Go scratch.
We'll get more into that coming up. Like, will the Dallas Cowboys trade him? Can I at least fantasize about it, even though you guys can't because they're not trading him to the New York Giants?
Oh, we don't need him.
Oh, wow.
We got three good ones.
I got it.
Week two, by the way. Win.
We'll get into the Micah Parsons thing along with the Terry McLaurin thing. I mean, we've got multiple NFC East players demanding trades in the last 17 hours. So a lot of football stuff to get to. We will get to your phone calls on the Yankees, on the Mets. We mentioned it earlier. Brian Cashman will join us. We've had ourselves a hell of a 48 hours in sports. Buried yesterday, right as the trade deadline was expiring, was the Knicks extending Mikal Bridges slightly below a max extension. You had all the trades from yesterday. The Yankees shocker of Camilo Duvall right at the buzzer. Less than an hour ago, the Yankees releasing Marcus Stroman. Late last night, Terry McLaurin formally demanding a trade. And now, Michael Parsons has written a book. I went on social media, and he's literally written like a 7-page essay on why he's demanding a trade from the Dallas Cowboys. And I guess if we wanted to summarize it in like 10 or 15 seconds, Jerry Jones is a fool. And like was talking to Micah Parsons this offseason about leadership, brought up his contract. Micah was honest about what he would want, said, hey, I'll have my agent call you. His agent calls Jerry and Stephen Jones, and they're like, what are you talking about? We've already made a deal. And Micah's like, what are they talking about?
Yeah.
And so he's pissed, and he says, I'm done.
It sounds like it has a grievance written all over it.
Oh, that's ugly then.
Yeah, it could get ugly, especially if Micah Parsons levies some kind of accusation that Jerry, and I guess Stephen, by extension, were negotiating with him and then refused to negotiate with his agent. That could get ugly.
Mm.
Could get real ugly.
My gut feeling when I hear stuff like this, even Terry McLaurin, is that, because we talked about Terry earlier this week, especially in regards to the Jets, because it kind of surprised me that the Jets were the favorites to acquire Terry McLaurin before he ever demanded a trade. And what we ended up saying about Terry when we wrapped the discussion up is, you know, ultimately it'll work itself out and he'll probably stay with Washington. And my gut in a case like this, especially with Micah Parsons, who's so freaking good, is that he's going to get paid and he'll be a Cowboy.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll all witness this. The national media will salivate over it. Even we will, because of the giant Cowboy connection and all the Cowboy fans in New York. But we're all wasting our time, because ultimately, Micah Parsons will be a Dallas Cowboy for the rest of his career. Are you telling me, Tiki, that some of the things Micah said are so bad that maybe this is irrefixable?
Irreparable.
Irreparable! Are you telling me this is irreparable?
I mean, this sounds like he doesn't want to have any kind of conversation or negotiation with the Dallas Cowboys going forward. One, you know, just to further explain this post, he said after 2023, so before last season, he reached out to the Cowboys about getting a deal done. He even said, to an extent, he would take a hometown discount.
Right.
And then he had the same conversation after the 2024 season. So this offseason, they wanted nothing to do with him until this leadership thing came up, this leadership meeting came up, and Jerry Jones thinks he negotiated the deal with Micah Parsons without engaging his agent, and now it's come to a head. And I think part of it is that the Cowboys, let's assume, because there are reports that come out saying Micah's doing this, or Micah did this, or Micah's hurt too much, or blah, blah, blah. He thinks it's all coming from the Cowboys. And so now his feelings are hurt, in addition to him getting no response from the Cowboys about any kind of contract negotiation. So it just kind of created this, I'm done with you.
Mm.
You're dead to me.
You're dead to me.
Type of moment for Micah Parsons, so much so that he posted this thing on X that basically says, see ya, thank you for having me. And so, we'll see.
Ugly.
The trade deadline is in, or the trade request is in. We'll see what happens.
Can I be the first? Are you guys good with it? Can I be the first?
Right. Sure.
Will McDonald in a number one. Let's go.
I was going Kayvon two ones.
Two ones?
We got to pay the division price.
24? He's 24.
And his good friends, Abdul Carter, as we spoke to yesterday. We got to pair the two.
Penn State East.
Here's the problem. Mine is a fantasy. Yours is a bigger fantasy. Oh, like, the Cowboys are obviously not trading Micah Parsons inside the division. He's not going to the Eagles. He's not going to the Giants. He's not going to go to the Commanders. I think if they ever traded him, the Jets have any chance as anybody. I think that, like, in all seriousness, because we're all screwing around, but now I'm getting serious. Jets are in a tough spot trading a first-round pick because we may need a quarterback next year. But imagine the Jets do that trade and then suck, and now it's like a top-three pick in the Arch Manning draft. And Micah is a generational kind of talent, so I wouldn't be crying over it, but I don't know if they're in position to do it. But that's my first thought, and I'm sure Jet fans are thinking the same thing.
The Jets screwing the Giants and handing the Cowboys a legitimate franchise quarterback for the next 15 years. Don't you dare do it.
No, I know. That's the risk in this whole thing. I almost need to know where the Jets are picking before we make a trade like that.
Right.
But they're not trading him.
Word of advice to
They're me. Not trading him. Am I wrong about that?
No, there's no chance.
They're not just going to say, sure, you get what you want. We're going to move you?
No chance that they're trading him.
And we've seen ugly contract negotiations between Jerry, Stephen Jones, and Cowboy players before. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think it's ever gotten this ugly, but my gut still tells me, as much fun as we'll have with it, making fun of Dallas or coming up with fake trades, ultimately, we're going to get the breaking news at some point. Micah Parsons signs the biggest contract in NFL history for a non-quarterback.
Schefter did tweet this. Parsons is 26. At 27, Khalil Mack was traded. The Bears gave up two firsts, a third, and a sixth to get Mac in a second rounder.
By the way, your package of two number ones is not crazy. They will ask for something like that.
But I think it's got to be more than that for Khalil Mack,
right? You're 1,000% right, and I think it's going to come down to the individual team and how far are you willing to go. I think if this does become a real discussion as a Jet fan, it is very complicated because I like Justin Fields. I want to see what he's got. But the reality is it's very likely the Jets are going to be searching for a quarterback in this year's draft, the next year's draft,
right,
and the year after. So moving multiple number ones when you're not protected at quarterback does feel uber risky, if you will.
I think the Cowboys need a hostile takeover to get Jerry out of there. A little business side of things.
No, but his son's running the show, too.
What are you going to do? You're going to get him out of there, and it's going to be Steven.
Yeah.
Now, maybe he's more rational and less, I don't know, off the wall than Jerry, but still, it's not going to be that much different. Apple doesn't fall that far from the tree.
Yeah, I mean, Steven's a part of this same thing.
Yeah, I mean, Micah is not cool with Steven more than he is with Jerry.
Yeah, but I get that's what the Cowboy fan is thinking right now. They're done with Jerry Jones, and why wouldn't you? Right, let's get to your phone calls. Obviously, this Micah Parsons thing on the table as well, but a lot on the Yankees and the Mets, who had very aggressive trade deadlines. I said it at the top of the show, to me, this is the happiest I think Met Yankee fans should be coming out of a trade deadline. I never remembered both teams being as successful and efficient as what they were able to pull off, and now it's on the players and the managers to seal the deal. Let's go to Gabe in Wayne, New Jersey. Yankee fan Gabe, how we feeling on this Friday?
I have to apologize to Mr. Cashman, Sir Cashman, Duke, Don Cashman. I got a lot of nicknames. I really am sorry. This was an incredible deadline. Very much, you know, impressed. They got a lot of talent that they desperately needed in the bullpen. They basically rebuilt the bullpen for peanuts. And it's not just for this year. It's controllable. So nothing but good things to say. I think Cashman did kind of like give a nod to the fact that, hey, it's on the manager now, in part, because he did say in that press conference, we went out and got the pieces that our manager needed. You know, he didn't need to say that. So he didn't need to say that. That part of me makes me think, like, he's like, I did my job. Go out there and win, which is great, and that's totally fair. Now, the one thing, the one caveat, I really wanted this Alcantara deal, and here's why. Here's why. Even if it meant trading Jones or Lombard, it's such a, like, a tasty idea to get a guy like Alcantara for 2 years beyond this year at only $17 million a year with the option of a third year in 2028. When you look at the last three starts of him clearly getting better after that Tommy John surgery, look, it's a lottery ticket, much in the same way that a prospect is, right? You could get him and he's just not as good as he was in that Cy Young year. But like the cost of an ace is so much higher than a $17.5 million deal. You can look at like Fried, Cole at their $31 and $36 million deals. It just it would have been too good for me to pass up. I'm glad I'm not in that position because I probably would have had the whole fan base hating me. But I think it was a really good opportunity, and it's going to be hard to strike if he does have a clean rest of the year. And in the offseason, we're fighting with guys like the Mets, and we can't compete with their prospects.
I'll tell you why respectfully I disagree with you about that. So I look at the Yankee rotation. We're talking about next year because what Sandy does over the next 2 months is a major question. He's pitched to a high ERA as well as he's pitched recently.
Right.
He's coming off Tommy John. Like, the Yankee medical team may say, we want an innings restriction on him. We have no idea. So Sandy is more about the future than now. I look at the Yankee future, and I see Gerrit Cole coming back from Tommy John surgery.
Good point.
I see Max Fried
it's
being
like we've
here.
We've almost forgot.
Right, and you can't.
Gerrit Cole is still here for a couple more years.
Gerrit Cole's here. Max Fried is here for an eternity. Carlos Rodon is here. Even Clark Schmidt could come back and pitch the second half of next year.
Yeah, he says he wants to. So we'll see how viable that is.
Who knows? You have Will Warren. You have Cam Schlittler. I think the Yankees more so needed a rental starter than a guy they'd be locked into long term. Like, sure, it's appealing to have a guy that you have for multiple years, but just looking at the Yankee rotation moving forward, I didn't think that was a necessity.
It's funny because I think most people are forgetting about Gerrit Cole. As crazy as that sounds.
Right.
Because you haven't seen him at all this year. So you're kind of forgetting about him. But the reality is in 2026, he's going to be your ace again. Or hopefully he's going to be yours. Probably Fried and then him. But one, two. They're going to be co-aces.
So your need for trading for a controllable potential ace, like, it's great if you get it. Right. I'm not saying you turn it down. But is that worth a top position player prospect, in my opinion, where the Yankees are? The answer is no. Like, the perfect fit for the Yankees would have been a rental. If Zach Gallen was traded, it would have been Zach Gallen. Would have been a guy of that nature because I think you're obviously thinking about the future, but you're thinking about right now. And right now, you're relying on a lot of uncertainties,
yep,
3 through 5 in this rotation the rest of the way. Mike is calling from Clifton Park, New York. Good afternoon, Mike.
Hey, guys. Great show. So I want to say one thing about the Mets and the Yankees. So I think the key for the Mets is their top three starting pitchers, they have to go 6 innings and pitch fairly well here. I think if they can do that, it unlocks everything, and they can really make a deep run. And then for the Yankees, you know, I have to give Brian Cashman credit because I don't know why teams want to trade with him because I can't remember the last time a prospect came up that was worth anything. And they keep trading with this guy. So it's pretty amazing to me. So, but good job by both teams. But Brian Cashman, I can't remember a prospect that came up that was been really good. And they keep wanting Yankee prospects. So amazing to me. Anyway, thanks, guys.
I almost want to challenge that with, do we consider Michael King a prospect? Probably not. He was already a major leaguer. do we consider J.P. Sears a prospect who just got traded by the A's? Like, it's not a complete dud that he just trades guys that don't work out. And if that's the case, like our last caller said, that's brilliant. Like, that's marketing. If you can somehow get general managers hot and bothered for prospects that really aren't that good and you turn it into good players.
Brilliance.
That's not bad.
Right.
I think they actually, you know who they ended up, you know, you think about a lot of the trades Brian's made over the years, and our last caller's right, a lot of the time it doesn't turn into anybody. I will give you a random Yankee trade in which the guys that they sent over actually turned into productive players. And it's going to be a trade that you forgot about and you're also disgusted by. Are you ready for this one?
Go ahead.
Joey Gallo.
Oh, God.
Because Josh Smith was in that trade, who's a really useful, can-play-everywhere player for the Texas Rangers. And Ezekiel Duran was in that trade, who's having an awful year this year, but was a part of that World Series team 2 years ago. So, of all the trades where guys turned into something, it was actually the time that they traded for Joey Gallo.
That was a bad one.
That was a bad one.
I think we can admit that.
But if that's the case, then that's great. Because like you said, Teak, part of the thing with prospects is turning them into something via trades.
Yeah.
Not always developing them.
You have too many of them. All of them are not going to make it. It just, that's the reality of it. All of them, even if they are good in single and double A and ultimately in triple A, all of them aren't going to make it in the major leagues on your team.
Right.
There's just not enough room.
And then it comes down to, okay, you built them up properly. What do you get them?
Yes.
Like, what do you turn them into?
Right.
And
what do you get for them?
The one that jumps out at me, I'll never forget, is the most hyped up Yankee prospect over the last 20 years, pound for pound, was Jesus Montero. Right-hand hitting catcher. He comes up late in 2011 and just tears the cover off the ball. Like, he was really good. It was a small sample size, but I remember hearing the Miguel Cabrera comparisons. So, looks amazing, right? Offseason comes. We got Montero. I can't wait. They trade him for Michael Pineda of the Seattle Mariners. And it was an uproar. Like, even Cashman, I think, admitted to Joe and I when we had him on, yeah, it's caused some sleepless nights. Like, but that's baseball. It's true.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Right. Yeah. We love Pineda. It is what it is. And Jesus Montero never became a good major leaguer. And so on one side, you say, hey, brilliant job pumping up Montero to the point where we were calling him Miguel Cabrera. But then you look at what they got back. And look, Michael Pineda had a decent career with the Yankees, but not to the level of what you thought. I mean, he was here for 4 years, and he was a back-of-the-rotation arm. Like,
most known for the glob on his neck.
That's right, the pine tar that he got thrown out of in that Red Sox game. So it's not just building them up the way they did so brilliantly with Montero. It's what do you turn them into? Mets did the same thing years earlier with a guy named Scott Kazmir. Built him up great. Then they traded him for Victor Zambrano. Well, Kazmir turned out to have a decent major league career. Zambrano sucked. So you got to turn those built-up prospects into something really, really good. And that's half the battle as well.
Right. It's hard to do, but it's half the battle.
Right. And that's where the Yankees have an edge on the Mets in terms of evaluating these trades. David Bednar comes here, hypothetically, Tiki, and just sucks. And I'm not saying it's going to happen, but the guy was in the minor leagues earlier this year. Let's say it happens.
Yeah.
And then next year is the most dominant closer in all of baseball.
And that could happen.
And that could happen.
It could be necessary because Luke Weaver and Devin Williams are both free agents.
Right.
And could end up elsewhere.
So our view on that trade short term would be, what a disaster. Guy can't pitch here. But then next year we'd say, hey, he saved it. Mm. The Mets traded for rentals. Like, Tyler Rogers and Ryan Helsley and Cedric Mullins, they're going to be judged on 2.5 months. That's it.
Right.
That's it. It's what do you do in this short sample size?
Wasn't there a third reliever?
Yeah, Gregory Soto.
Soto, that's right.
I don't even include him, but
before, because he was before.
You're right.
We almost forget.
And we shouldn't, because he's a part of the deadline. Ryan McMahon's a part of the deadline. But those guys the Mets got are all judged on 2.5 months.
Yeah.
The Yankee guys are judged on 2.5 months, plus the extra years of control that they actually have. Let's go to Joey in Westchester. What's up, Joey?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
I think Cashman won the deadline outside of the Padres, maybe. Like, and I'm not apologizing because I personally think I'm a rational Yankees fan, and our fan base has been ridiculous. But according to Zips of Fangraphs, prior to the deadline, the Yankees bullpen was projected to be the 17th best in the league for the rest of the season. And after the deadline, third best. Also from Zips, the Yankees improved their division odds by the third most percentage points and World Series odds by the fourth most percentage points. And lastly, anyone for upset at Cashman right now for not getting a starter, like, kick rocks. Like, I mean, the bullpen is going to be ridiculous come October.
Yeah. I mean, the reality with the starters, and we talked about this all day yesterday, is that they were done moving.
Yeah.
And even if they were even potentially on the block, they were so expensive, it wasn't worth it.
I totally agree. And that's how I like to view the trade deadline. I remember in the past, fans would get pissed at, we should have traded for that guy, and that guy was never even traded.
Right.
I can't get mad at not trading for a player that was never ultimately traded. Because we don't know how serious Miami ever got about Sandy Alcantara, or how serious Cleveland ever got about Steven Kwan. We have no idea, because they were never traded. And look, Zips and projections, they're all fine. And yes, they tell the story that the Yankees added good players, there's no doubt. It is very tough to predict what's going to happen now, because there's a human factor to all this that's really tough to predict.
Yeah.
And like, let's use Ryan Helsley as an example on the Mets side. Ryan Helsley's been a closer for the St. Louis Cardinals. He is now coming to New York, where he's being asked to do something different in a different environment, where he's just moved his family. Like, those are the elements of rentals that you just don't know. And that's why sometimes there have been all-time bad rentals. Like, you bring a guy in, and they're terrible.
Right.
And it's tough to explain why. Sometimes it is the human nature of, well, that guy's got a family, he just picked up and moved. It's not easy. Now, we view it as they're machines, they're robots, you've got to be good. And I could sit here and look at Helsley's numbers all day and tell you, I feel good, he'll be good. We have no idea. Same with David Bednar. David Bednar is from Pittsburgh. He is. He lived in Pittsburgh. He grew up in Pittsburgh. He's loved there.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's excited to come here. But I'm also sure there's this, wow, this is weird.
Right. Well, I mean, you just take it as a business. It's the business, and you're on a business trip, and it's an extended one. But this is could be permanent if you do things right.
Well, but you also don't know, how do you initially react to that business trip that you're on?
I hear you.
And we've seen so many guys go on the business trip and perfect it. They come over, and they're great. And then other guys struggled. I give you one where the guy admitted the family stuff was an issue. 2016, the Mets traded for Jay Bruce. They needed a big bat. They got Jay Bruce. If you remember his numbers in 2016, they were awful. He was terrible. He was getting booed. It was disgusting. He was back the following year, if memory serves correct. And I think he was very productive. And that's when the Mets ended up trading him at the trade deadline. I think that's what ended up happening. Like, he had a year of control, and then he was good the following year. So here are his numbers. In 2016, after the trade, .219 batting average.
Ooh.
A .685 OPS. It was bad.
Didn't get lifted by the trade.
Did not work. That year, by the way, with Cincinnati before the trade, .265, .875 OPS, 25 home runs. He was having a really good year.
Mm-hmm.
Comes over, it doesn't work. Following year, and I remember a lot of Met fans were like, you can't bring this guy back. I think the phrase was, he can't handle New York. And I remember saying, you may be right. I'm not convinced of it yet, but I don't know. He comes back for 2017, and before the trade deadline, he hits .256, .841 OPS, 29 home runs in 103 games. Not bad, right?
No, not bad at all.
And Jay eventually admitted it was the culture shock. I had a family, I moved, and it was a very tough adjustment.
Yeah,
and it checks out based on his performance.
Yeah, and it's hard to just even know. How do you predict that?
You can't.
Exactly.
You can't.
You can't. Well, first of all, you're not spending any time with them. This is all based on what you think their reaction is going to be as a player, but also as a person. It's not like pre-draft process,
right,
where you go and you spend time, you get to know the person, you're like, you're gonna work here, let's go, let's draft you. You're just kind of guessing, maybe trying to get some intel from people who have been around it, but it's an impossibility. You don't know. That side of it kind of gets discounted to the point where it could derail the entire thing.
That's where, on paper, you love this trade, I love this trade, it makes sense, he feels reliable, but the human nature of it is so freaking unpredictable. Now, again, the Yankees' advantage is that these guys, every single one of them, are here next year. Now, that's not going to make a Yankee fan feel better, because if David Bednar comes here and struggles, you guys aren't going to want him on the team next year. It's an easy thing to say, well, he stinks. He can't handle New York. I don't want him. But you at least have that option where then the following season, you know, maybe he contributes to you. So we can react to the trade deadline. It's sort of like the NFL draft. In the moment, we love it. We like it. At the end of the day, the guy's got to perform.
Yeah. And does this pretty much mean Devin Williams is not signing here, right? Like, there's no way. It's way too crowded now.
The reason why I wouldn't rule it out is because Doval and Bednar don't make a lot of money. So they're under team control, and they're not making a fortune.
Yeah, they're not paid to be the star.
Right.
The closer.
And I think a lot of it's going to be determined by the market for Devin Williams. We'll see what it is. And then really what it's going to be determined by is the performance.
Yeah.
So
who earns it?
Right. Because yesterday when they made all these trades, we briefly had the discussion, who's the closer? Aaron Boone answered it. For those that don't know, the closer is Devin Williams. So what does he do? If he has a perfect postseason, I think that offseason discussion looks very different. I think based on how much money he's offered. But I don't necessarily think these trades eliminate it, but it does protect them. Like, they don't have to re-sign Devin Williams.
Right, because I bring that up because if Edwin opts out and the Mets have a, you know, a closer position open, there could be a little bit of an arms race there and any other team. If Williams can handle New York over the next second half, there'll be no questions of, well, he can't handle the market or anything like that. He'd be a hot commodity.
The Mets are in a different spot because their entire bullpen is going to basically be free agents.
Right.
Tyler Rogers is going to be a free agent. Ryan Helsley is going to be a free agent. Edwin Diaz has an opt-out. I fully expect he's going to use it. Mm-hmm. He's going to be a free agent. So I don't know what the Met plan is for the offseason. I don't even care right now because we have a 2.5 months, hopefully, to see what happens. But the Yankees have control. I mean, that's kind of the other appeal of what they did is that, yeah, they've got a bunch of guys who are going to be here next year. And it leaves them the wiggle room to possibly keep Luke Weaver and Devin Williams. Maybe they don't. We'll see.
Maybe they have that and they sign Michael King to be a starter.
They could do that, too. He's a free agent at the end of the year. Michael King got traded in my fantasy league, and I'm trying to, like, not forget who got traded in fantasy and who got traded in real life. It gets confusing sometimes. I'm like, wait, wasn't Michael King No, that was the fantasy league. That's right. Because we finally aligned the real MLB trade deadline with the fantasy trade deadline, which we've never been able to do.
Right, which is smart.
I agree, isn't it?
Yeah, because you're thinking about it in real life.
Right.
So you might as well think about it in your fantasy league.
But you know how it impacts fantasy? Because it impacted me last night. One of my closers on my fantasy team is Camilo Doval. So he gets traded to the Yankees, and I'm like, wait a second, his role's completely different. So there are ways where, like, fantasy trades impact what you're going to do. We'll get back to your calls next. Your opinion on what the Mets did, the Yankees did, the latest on Micah Parsons and Carlos Correa's an Astro. How does it change how you feel? Plus, Brian Cashman joins us right up at 4 o'clock. 888-808-1019.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EAR-POD-1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.